Wendy Simmons is a globetrotter with a penchant for breaking the rules, so it comes as a surprise when she chose... So it comes as no surprise when she chose the world's most restrictive country on the planet to spend her vacation. None other than North Korea. As soon as she arrives, her vacation starts to look more like a prison, and the list of things she cannot do grows by the minute. She cannot go outside unaccompanied. She cannot photograph empty shelves or litter. And every hour of every day is scheduled to convince her of the greatness of North Korea. In her travel memoir titled, My Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest, Worst Place on Earth, Wendy takes an intimate and hard-nosed look at the country and all its craziness and all its humanity. The book is published by Rosetta Books, and I'm very pleased it brings Wendy Simmons to our show today. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
First off, why on earth did you choose to vacation in North Korea?
Oh, because it's so beautiful. I really seek adventure and unique places, and North Korea fit the bill. So,
did you plan on writing a book?
I did not. I really didn't. I love traveling. I go all over the world, and I went to North Korea, as I do everywhere, just for the experience. But unlike every place else I go in the world, when I came home, I just couldn't let it go. It really stuck with me, and I wanted to share the experience with everyone else, so I wrote the book.
So what made you go, Europe? Nah. South America? Nope.
I want to go everywhere in the world. And, I've been all over. I've been to most every continent with the exception of Antarctica. And to be perfectly honest, I had heard, but I'd heard in the same week from two different people who had gone to North Korea, and I got it in my head that it was going to change and become normal. So I really sort of rushed to get there before it did.
So is going to North Korea as simple as Expedia.com, looking up a flight, and then just signing yourself up for a tour group?
No, it's not difficult, but it's not that simple. There are a few agencies that work out of China, and they interact with the Korean Tourism Board that's located in North Korea in Pyongyang. And they help facilitate all of the logistics for you. They help arrange for you to get your visa. And you fly to Beijing, and you're not actually issued your visa until 24 hours in advance. So you go to Beijing not knowing whether or not you'll be allowed in.
Wow.
But the chances are pretty good.
Okay.
And before you're allowed to have a visa, you have to specify your entire itinerary. Every single hour of every day, you have to tell them what you'll be doing. And you go to Beijing, they brief you, they tell you what you can and cannot do in the country. You board a flight, and you're into North Korea.
Beginning each chapter is a quote from Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
Yeah.
Did you feel like you were Alice?
100%. Yeah, you fall right through the looking glass.
So you're saying North Korea is Wonderland?
It's the opposite of Wonderland. You just feel like you're in another planet altogether. It's surreal. It's a surreal experience. It's like no place I've ever been.
Did you ever feel, I'm not safe?
I get asked that question a lot, and I didn't. They go to great lengths to make you very comfortable and to make sure that you're happy and taken care of. I didn't feel threatened, and they're very, also my handlers were always cautioning me about what I could and could not do.
So the Jeffrey Fowle story didn't freak you out. So in 2014, Jeffrey Fowle was arrested,
right?
because was held in a North Korean prison for 6 months after leaving a Bible in a nightclub. Did stories like that make you go, whoa, I gotta be careful?
Well, I'm always careful everywhere I go, and I'm respectful of cultures and the laws, and I don't do anything purposely stupid, so I left my Bibles at home, for example.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
okay.
I didn't to proselytize. I wouldn't have gone had I thought there was any real danger. And when I was there, I took some chances with photos, but for the most part, I just didn't do anything stupid.
When you were there, were you allowed to travel independently?
No, you're not allowed to go anywhere without your handlers. Unless you are in your hotel room, you are accompanied by two handlers and your driver at all times. I couldn't go to the bathroom by myself.
Really?
Really.
So someone would walk you into the bathroom?
Correct.
And
wait.
And you would close the stall?
Yeah, I was allowed in the stall by
myself. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Who were the women that toured you around?
They were older handler and fresh handler. And when I arrived at the airport and came through in customs and immigration, they were waiting on the other side.
Wait, they had names though, right?
They had names.
Okay, yeah. Okay. But in the book you called them older handler.
In the book I called them older handler and fresh handler.
Okay, gotcha.
And they were with me at all times, literally all times. We were together for 8, 10, 12 hours a day for 10 straight days until they returned me to the airport.
When you did small talk with them, what was it like when you're like, older handler, what are your hobbies? What are your interests?
They were not very forthcoming, as you might imagine. They per the most well media trained individuals that I've ever encountered in my entire life, and they were very difficult to shake from the rhetoric. Fresh Handler, she was younger, and she and I would say we bonded a lot better than older Handler and I did. And she was a little bit more forthcoming about her life and about the reality of what her situation was. But older Handler, you know, she was a tough one. She really stuck to the script. And only in very fleeting moments would she let me into what her life was like.
What did they think of you?
It's a tricky question. I think, older Handler and Fresh Handler had different impressions of me. Older Handler, I think she had a lot of conflict. She'd been a business person. She'd been exposed to the West through her husband. I think she had a bit of envy for the life that I lead. And some conflict, you know, the life that she'd been a part of her entire existence was sort of crumbling before her eyes. You know, everything she'd been taught since birth was more or less not the truth. And she was sort of seeing this through not just myself, but other tourists. And I think in the case of older Handler, she sort of hated me and respected me at the same time.
How did they realize that? I mean, was it one of those things where you were on the tour and then you're like, oh, let me check my Apple Watch. And they're like, what is that?
Well, you know, they've been inculcated from birth to believe a certain rhetoric. And that is that North Korea is great and advanced and the rest of the world is behind them. And America is awful and the cause of all their problems and we're terrible people and monsters. And now they're interacting with Westerners on a regular basis who are contrary to everything they've been told. You know, I'm telling them stories that don't match up with everything they think they know. And I'm not a horrible ogre, you know.
Like that's the narrative.
Exactly.
That they've been, okay.
Yeah, I mean, people hate you.
When you came in, were you mm-hmm. like, look, there might be a level of ethnocentrism that I have here where we all think North Korea is this thing, like we saw in the Vice mm-hmm. documentary with mm-hmm. Dennis Rodman, where people, you go to an office building and it's just everybody's on just the Google homepage, but nobody has internet access and it's all this massive charade. What you saw there, did it match up with that narrative?
Largely, yes.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. And I didn't do any research before I went.
Interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
Everywhere I go in the world, I really try to go without knowing anything. I don't like to have preconceived ideas. I like to see things for the first time myself. I don't want anyone else's opinions thrown in
my head.
So
you don't TripAdvisor North Korea and go, where are the hotspots?
No, you know, I didn't really do that. And so I arrived there knowing much less than people think one would going there. I had researched, you know, what camera I could bring and that type of thing. But, anything I had heard on the news or when I came back and read a lot of the articles and saw the Vice documentary when I came home, it's absolutely accurate. And
wow.
Just in the past month when they had the Congress and the Washington Post was reporting every day, you know, they're saying the exact same thing as my book did. So it's exactly what you think it is.
When you were there, mm-hmm. the movie, the interview with James Franco and
yeah.
Seth Rogen,
yeah.
it had just come out.
Yeah, that was bad timing. Actually, it hadn't come out. It had been announced.
Oh, okay.
And my first morning there, they declared war on America over that movie. Yeah, good times.
Were you scared?
No. I mean, what could you do? I was there. So I don't think it really affected me since most people who live there don't know. They don't have television. They don't have access to the internet or the radio. It was more just concern for my family at home, you know, seeing that America was under, you know, the threat of attack.
Did North Korean TV report on any of the offending scenes from the movie?
I don't know about North Korean television. I was at the hotel in Pyongyang that morning and they had BBC. So I caught the BBC story.
Oh, interesting.
And they showed clips from the movie, which I found humorous. After the story ran the first time, they pulled the story, and I never saw it again. But, you know, I was just getting ready in my hotel room that first morning, and the story came on, and they showed the clips. They said that they were promising merciless retaliation against America, and I thought, wow, that's awesome timing. I've been here 12 hours.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm Hasan Minhaj, and today for Leonard Lopate, you're listening to WNYC and WNYC.org, and we're talking to Wendy Simmons about her holiday in North Korea. Wendy, when you're in North Korea and you're in your hotel room and you turn on the TV, what channels are there?
So in Pyongyang, they have BBC and Al Jazeera. But when you're outside of Pyongyang, it's 100% propaganda. They have two channels and they're both state-run. And you may have seen it where it's the newscasters sitting bolt upright and speaking in this very floral language, and that's it. It's that and war movies.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So there's no TV. It's not like variety shows where, you know, you can flip around the channel and make choices. There's two state-run, and they're piped into the homes, and that's all they have.
how did you feel about when North Koreans referred to you not as the American, but they referred to you as the American imperialist?
Right. So they
was
just,
that sort of terrifying? Like, how did you feel?
No, you know, it's not flattering, but sure. You get used to it. So, I mean, they call you that right to your face. So, and they'll say, "We hate you."
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We hate you. We hate your country. And, you know, they take you around to all the exhibits that show Americans
doing bad things. Were you like, I'm sorry, I'm just here to...
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No. I mean, I would sometimes say, you know, I wasn't alive during that war. That's not really my war. I wasn't part of that war. You know, I would sort of make the clarification for them at times. But no, generally, I just sort of smiled and...
Okay.
What are you going to say?
Well, that's so polite of you. They're like, we hate your guts. Yeah. And you're just like...
I was like, thanks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your book is full of photographs
yeah.
of school children, yeah. of men in military uniforms, and of the women's maternity hospital.
Yeah.
The country considers you the American imperialist. So how are you allowed to document this trip?
Well, they let you take photos of some things some places. Other places you have to ask permission. And I would fake it a little bit. So I would pretend I was taking a photo of one thing and sort of aim the camera a little bit another way, or they would think I was taking the photo and would it be done, but I would keep taking the photo. And also because I was alone, not with a group, and I was with my handlers for such a long time, relatively speaking. Most people are there 2 days, 5 days. I was there 10. My handlers, you know, they're just normal people. So they got bored of me and tired, and they'd fall asleep a lot, and I would take pictures when they were sleeping, or I had convinced them that there's no grass in New York, and so when we were out in the countryside, they would let me take more pictures because there was grass and, you know, just little things. So
you describe things being really eerie, where you would go to a shopping center or, like, an amusement park, and there was nobody there.
No, well, there's no shopping centers. But, yeah, anywhere I went in North Korea, it would be empty. And then shortly after I would arrive, you know, large groups of people would show up, ostensibly to show that it was a normal place. But it would be the kind of thing where, you know, you mentioned the hospital. I would go to the hospital and there would be no patients. And they would tell me that all the patients just left. Or at the factory, they would say the factory just closed 5 minutes ago because of a power outage and all 5,000 workers had to leave. You know, or the amusement park, when we arrived, no one is there. There's not a soul in the amusement park. And 15 minutes later, 400 adults and military people show up walking in lockstep. And this is supposed to, you know, show me that North Korea is normal. And adults routinely come 400 at a time to an amusement park at 10 a.m. on Tuesday.
And they have this all set up almost like a prop.
You know, I suppose that's the conundrum. You know, maybe that's what happens in North Korea, or it's set up for me. That's, you know, what you struggle with the entire time you're there.
At some point, did you wonder or ask them, hey, what do you do? What do your handlers do? Or what does your family do?
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're obviously not working at the factory, or where are all these people?
I ask these questions. I say this in the book. It was like baby talk, Martian talk. You know, I would say things like, where do you go at night? How do you get groceries? Do you walk down an aisle? Do you pick things off a shelf? I mean, the kinds of questions I asked really made me sound like I didn't understand the mechanics of Earth. And they would either answer me as if I was crazy enough to ask such simple questions, or if they didn't want to answer because it would compromise whatever information they were allowed to provide, they would just pretend I wasn't talking, or they wouldn't answer me at all, or they would just say yes. So it's not very easy to elicit information. And they lie. You know, they lie pretty much all the time. And it's not as if they're being malicious. They're just not able to be honest with you about a lot of what their life is like. So, you know, over the course of 10 days, asking the same questions over and over, them getting sort of tired of me, I sort of was able to parse out different bits of information and put together stories. But, you know, it's not a normal life. So it's not as if when you're talking to someone from Europe or Asia where it might be a slightly different variations of themes you know. It's just a completely different way of living.
Do you think any of the citizens there had seen glimpses of what the outside world was like, that maybe they got a few minutes on the internet or YouTube or something where they could go, God, this is what...
No, I think the average citizen, absolutely not. 100% no. There's no internet. Or there may be for the, you know, the elites. But the average North Korean who is not part of the party elite, or the 1% that live in Pyongyang, 100% not. The richer folks, the people that are higher level government, the people that are the guides such as mine, yeah, I think that to some extent they've been exposed to Western culture, whether it's to prepare them to work with outsiders or in whatever capacity. That's, you know, I think this is where the country is starting to open up on some level. I mean, how can it not? They can't talk to Westerners week after week and not, you know, that exposure not be permeating them in some way.
Right. At one point, you change plans for the day and you choose to go watch a football, soccer, for right. people here in America.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the mausoleum that houses the bodies of the former leaders is oddly closed?
Correct. Yeah. Well, so they, you know, I don't know. Yes. We'll just say yes.
Did you think that the soccer match was set up just for you?
Again, this is the conundrum. You know, I felt like a crazy person imagining that a country would organize
a soccer
game for me.
It sounds like the Truman Show.
Right.
It honestly really does sound like the Truman Show.
You know, the mausoleum visit got canceled on Sunday at 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and my handler went through a list of activities that could replace it, and she mentioned soccer game, and I said, great. And she looked alarmed, and a flurry of phone calls followed, and she turned to me about 15 minutes later and said, you're in luck. There's a soccer game tomorrow at 9 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Which was when I needed the space filled, and I said, a national game? That seems incredible. And she said yes.
I've been speaking with Wendy Simmons about her strange vacation in North Korea. She's written about her experience in a book called My Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest Worst Place on Earth. It's published by Rosetta Books. Wendy, thank you so much.
Thanks.